funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd. For the eighth time in 20 years, the Dallas Independent School District is in the market for a new superintendent. KERA's Bill Siebel reviews the history.
Across the country, urban superintendents last, on average, about 3 years. Sometimes, though, superintendents don't even last 3 years. Back in 1997, after Chad Woolery served his 3 years, trustees hired the district's first Hispanic female superintendent. Yvonne Gonzalez steered a bulldozer across Reunion Arena for a huge, pricey school kickoff rally for employees.
Those children next Monday, when they come through the schoolhouse doors, know they have an army. They have an army of 19,000 of us that are going to fight for them.
Gonzalez's actions drove the district into a ditch. She lasted 8 months.
Yvonne Gonzalez, she resigned. She was sent to prison for using school funds to buy furniture.
Tawnell Hobbs is a longtime education reporter for the Dallas Morning News. After Gonzalez left for her sparsely furnished federal cell, Bill Huey became interim, then full-time superintendent. 2 years later, Hobbs says trustees reached out to a man from San Francisco.
And Bill Rojas, when he came in, they had a lot of promise. The relationship with the board was so fractured. He actually got terminated when he was on vacation. So there you go on that.
Rojas lasted 11 months. That's when Mike Moses arrived.
Moses was very stabilizing, and the city leaders were really tired. So, you know, he made everybody feel good. I mean, he has a great background. He's a former education commissioner. He has a good reputation in the education community.
Moses served his three, helping usher through a bond package. He left saying he was worn out. Another interim served half a year before Michael Hinojosa arrived and stayed 6 years.
We always like to say in our searches that you really need to stay for 5 to 6 years in order to make meaningful change. And that's, I think, the difficult with urban change so quickly.
Kenneth Dragseth is president of School Exec Connect, a national search firm that helps find superintendent candidates. What happens when the district leader leaves too soon?
Long-term student achievement gains don't happen with constant change, with constant turnover.
That's Mike Moses, former Dallas superintendent, who joined a different school leader search firm. Former teacher and Dallas School Board Secretary Bob Johnston concurs. He retired in 2000 after nearly 40 years with the Dallas District.
If you're not there long enough, you can't really do anything to influence what goes on in the schools. And the key to the success of all of those who have stayed over any long period of time has been that they hired good education people on their staff who could then influence the schools and make changes in the schools.
Michael Hinojosa oversaw academic gains during his tenure, but also laid off hundreds of teachers because of accounting mistakes. Dragseth, the search firm chief, says money management often trips up superintendents.
You know, one of the first things that gets a superintendent released is if they aren't managing the finances. So you've got to be able to balance the budget and get the competence of the community that the district is being run well.
Hinojosa brought in expert fiscal managers, fixed the problem, then left to run a district in Georgia. Now he's back in an interim role. Trustees may decide to keep him, but they also plan to search the country for candidates to lead a district that Dragseth says comes with a label.
I think it has a reputation of turning over superintendents. I think it's a tough district.
As the eighth superintendent in 2 decades may soon find out. Bill Siebel, KERA News.
So even as the search for a new superintendent begins, many people are wondering what will happen to the reform initiatives started but not completed by Mike Miles, who departed in June. And what sort of person does the school district need in charge now? Joining us to talk about the job of the superintendent and what makes the position at the helm of DISD different from other districts, we have three guests who care deeply about education and the professionals who provide it. Eric Cowan is president of the board of the Dallas Independent School District. Miguel Solis is first vice president of the DISD board. And Rena Honey is president of Alliance AFT, the local affiliate of the American Federation of Teachers. Welcome, all of you, to Think.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
I want to start with what for you might sound like a ridiculously simple question, but I don't think it is. And Eric, I'll throw this to you. In a sentence or two, what exactly does the superintendent of an urban school district do?
Well, he is the leader of a billion-dollar organization with 160,000 kids to look after and about 20,000 employees. So you need somebody who knows how to manage people well and who's an educational thought leader as well.
How important is that education background when it is in some ways like running a fairly large company? Is a background in education vital, or is a background in management equally as important or even more important?
I think both.
This is Miguel.
I think both. I've been a teacher in Dallas ISD, and I also served in the administration under Mike Miles for some time. And I know, having seen Mike Miles and then later on now seen Dr. Hinojosa manage the school system, you got to have a little bit of educator in you, but you've also got to have a little of that CEO style. The educator piece is important because you are fundamentally leading over 10,000 educators on a day-to-day basis. And in some ways, those educators, to get true buy-in, have to believe in you, and they have to believe that you know what you're talking about and that you've been in the classroom or that you've been a principal or been a middle manager. But in some ways, you also are running an extremely large organization with a $1.6 billion budget. And so you've got to make tough calls in many cases. You have to have that business sense. How do you position our school system to be the driving force that grows our city and our region as well?
Rena?
I agree with some of the things. I think it's extremely important that as the academic leader of a urban public school system, you definitely have to have an educator that's well-grounded in educational philosophy, child development, to know what works with children, to stay informed on new innovations, new classroom procedures. But I think first and foremost, you also have to have a good communicator, one that talks with the educators that are in the actual trenches every single day, someone that stays in connection with the ones that are implementing the strategies, that are implementing the programs, that are working day in and day out with those students and with the parents and with the community. So communication is a huge piece of it. I mean, we have to have an educator, a CEO, a manager, a communicator, a financial person. So it's very difficult to find someone for a large urban city public school system that can do those things and do them well.
I want to offer some perspective here from the last person to have this position. When Mike Miles was on this show the day after he announced his resignation, I asked him whether a successful superintendent needed direct experience as an educator, and here's what he had to say.
If you really want to design systems that impact teachers, it helps if you have that understanding of what it really means and takes to be a teacher. I've been a teacher. But I can imagine successful superintendents. It's not just about the classroom experience. It's also about running a big operation. There's that management side. But the leadership side will suffer a little bit because leadership is also about inspiring and taking people to a place they would not otherwise go. You know, teachers want to see people walk the talk, right? They want to see that you know what they're feeling, you know what it's about. Doesn't mean you can't do it. And there's been a lot of successful superintendents who've not been teachers, but I think it certainly would help.
Does it seem as if there is in another urban school district somewhere the perfect candidate, or do we need to start thinking about candidates who might come from other professions, other fields?
No, I think we need to bring somebody in who knows education. It's hard in a urban district of this size to find a perfect management CEO and a perfect educational leader in one person. One thing we haven't talked about is that the superintendent is also responsible for hiring high-level executives and administrators, both on the mid-level and the campus level. A superintendent needs experience in education to be able to identify the best people for those jobs.
I think the word perfect is something that we need to move away from when thinking about the leader of our school system. And I think that's a national trend that we've also seen as well, that there are heroic candidates that come in and say, we are going to completely change the school system. We are going to put in all these nice bells and whistles. And if you follow my lead, and we will be successful. that's just not happening across large urban school systems. These you know, all-star candidates that come in eventually find out they come into a school system that they really don't know that well and have to learn the job over a year and a half. And then you look at the national turnover for superintendents, and it's 3 years. So you really only have about a year and a half, and then you're on to the next gig. So we need to move away from perfect. And I agree with Eric. Make sure that we're focused on bringing the right candidate who understands the bigger picture and maybe even has some ties to our system and ties to our community as well.
I think it's also important. I know a lot of the educators would hope that the next superintendent would be from the state of Texas. It's important that they know Texas law, Texas education code, know what is appropriate, what is not. And people that are not grounded in education in Texas have a harder time, and the learning curve takes longer, I believe. So the hope for many is that the new superintendent would come from somewhere within Texas and be familiar with those things and hopefully be ahead in that area.
What does it take, I mean, not even to hit the ground running, but just to get a sense of what the district is, what all the schools are, what the specific problems are, when you come to a place as large as Dallas ISD, that's not a job that can be done by reading over materials, I would think, 6 weeks before you step into the job. So what kind of process have you seen in the past? What do you expect the next superintendent to do to know that he or she understands this specific situation?
I think it takes the better part of a school year. You need to get out and you need to meet community stakeholders. You need to meet with the campus leadership. And that's why we give superintendents 3 to 4 year contracts so that they can take their time, get to know the community and get to know their schools and not look to make drastic decisions, making sure they have all the information they need to make positive changes for our school district.
Also, I think it's really important that they do have the book knowledge. They have gone over documents and things, but they take the time, like Eric said, to actually sit and meet with people. There are many different stakeholders in the city, but that most importantly, they have to meet with the educators, with the people that are on staff at the campuses, as well as the work sites. It takes all of us to keep this district going. And to do that, to meet with parents, they are sending us their best every single day. And they need to be a part of the process from the ground up, not given a plan and say, let's look at this and what do you think needs to change, but let them be in the groundwork as well. They're city leaders, they're business leaders that need to have a stakeholder as well. But first and foremost, I hope that whoever it is will take time to spend not only with our professional staff, our teachers and administrators, but with our support staff as well, because they are a huge piece of this process as well.
And, you know, I don't know if Eric loses sleep the way that I lose sleep when I think about the superintendent search, but one of the reasons why it's always on my mind is because, you know, we're debating, do we want to do a national search? Do we want to do a local search? Could potentially the guy or the woman who leads our school system be right in front of us? And we just don't see it at this moment. I'm leaning towards not going out to the nation. And here's a reason why, because it takes someone too long to really learn our community, our history, and the politics that come with the ISD. And I think that that person who comes in, whoever it is going to really have to take a long, hard look at all of those contributing factors, because if they don't do that, ultimately that could lead to their downfall. And I don't want to see that happen again.
We'll talk about those politics and lots more in a couple of minutes. We're discussing DISD's search for a new superintendent with Miguel Solis, who is first vice president of the board of the Dallas Independent School District, Eric Cowan, president of the board, and Rena Honey, president of Alliance AFT, which is the local affiliate of the American Federation of Teachers. You can join our conversation at 1-800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Master of Liberal Studies program. You can apply now for fall and design your own master's degree at SMU, a customizable evening master's degree for working professionals. More at smu.edu/MLS.
This is Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd, speaking this hour with Rena Honey of Alliance AFT and Miguel Solis and Eric Cowan of the board of the Dallas Independent School District. We're talking about DISD's search for a new superintendent. Today's conversation is part of KERA's American Graduate Initiative, charting the journey from childhood to graduation. You can tune in to Morning Edition tomorrow at 8:20 as our Stella Chavez looks into how changes in urban districts have made a superintendent's job tougher. If you'd like to be part of this conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or find me on Twitter at Chris Boyd Think. Is it too broad to say there are inherent tensions between the board, teachers' organizations, and any superintendent?
I don't think so. I know for Alliance AFT, for us, it needs to be a collaborative process that isn't always going to happen because management thinks of management things and employees think of workers' issues. But the ultimate goal is to find common ground, find resolution that is the best for our students to help them move forward. And there are going to be bumps and hurdles along the way, but there also has to be some give and take on both sides. We know from companies that do extremely well, they treat their employees extremely well. They listen to them. And for some reason in education, there's always somebody that thinks they know a little bit more. And that's okay, because that happens on both sides. But we have to be collaborative. We have to listen as much as we speak and try to find what's best for the students. When we keep them at the focus, no matter what the opinions are, we should be able as professionals to come to a common ground, work out a resolution to move forward. And that's our goal.
You know, I think I agree with Rena in many senses, but I've had a unique, as I mentioned earlier, I've been in the classroom, I've been in the administration, and then I ran for the board and ran the board as president last year. I think there is an inherent tension there, and it just comes with the territory. Teachers will, when I was a teacher, we used to consistently say, you know, those people down at the central office, they don't understand us, they don't get us. And so you kind of create this this divide. And then in central office, you say, you know, we're making these big systemic decisions. We know we're doing it for kids. So why are we getting so much pushback? And that back and forth, I think, leads to, you know, polemics and special interests saying, you know, we're going to take this side or we're going to take that side. That we live in a democracy. That's going to happen. But I think Rena's bigger point is, and I agree with it, that's where I think the board and the superintendent play a big role. What we don't need to see is a toxic culture at the top, because this inherent tension already exists. We have to be bigger and better, and I put politics aside. But what you've seen in DISD for years is that there has been a toxic culture in some ways between the superintendent and the board. And I think we need to figure out a way to move past that, to really put kids at the forefront of what we do. And if we can get to that point with this new superintendent, I think we're headed in the right direction.
So what's the reason for that toxic culture? Do we just keep hiring the wrong people? Is there something in the makeup of the board? Or is it something about this city, this district, that leads to that kind of tension?
I think it's a combination of everything. We have single-member districts, which have inherent tension problems itself. We have somewhat of a segregated city in terms of demographics and certain parts of areas in the makeup of their schools. So just going back to what these two just said, that's why it's important to have a superintendent who's a consensus builder and a good communicator. We're going to have tension, but let's make it positive tension for the benefit of our children.
We talk a lot, understandably, and I'm a parent with children in Dallas Public Schools, about the superintendent having accountability for the performance of students and student achievement and graduation rates. I was really interested, though, in a Brookings study published last year, and maybe you're familiar, that essentially concluded that superintendents have very little influence on student achievement. Is it reasonable to expect them to produce measurable increases year over year, or is it enough for them to successfully manage all the individuals who are working hard to provide that classroom-level education for our students.
It was an interesting study. And I remember getting it and having a conversation with Mike Miles going, hey, man, maybe you don't mean so much. And he says, well, he agreed in some sense and he disagreed in some sense as well. It's going to be really hard to make me believe that a superintendent who has enough time to try to place systemic changes in place and allow those things to kind of grow, that doesn't have an impact. I studied under a gentleman by the name of Tom Paysant while I was attending Harvard, and he was the Boston Public School superintendent for, I want to say, 14 or 15 years. When he came in, BPS was not doing too hot. He got time. That was under mayoral control under Mayor Menino, but he had about 15 years, and by the end of it, Boston Public Schools is kind of a shining star and a beacon of hope for the nation. They won the Broad Prize right towards the end of his tenure. It makes a difference, but I think, and what the study really gets to, is what makes more difference is teachers who are allowed the opportunity and the autonomy to be successful as professionals, and middle managers who can allow that systemic change to really take root.
I agree. I think so much of the creativity, the autonomy of the classroom teachers have been taken away, whether it be through district mandates, through state legislative mandates, and we have to get back to educating the total child. A child is not just a test score, and so much emphasis has been placed on testing, but we have to get back to where we can be creative in the classroom, meet the needs of the children where they are, and our classes are so versatile now. We have so many children that learn in different ways, and when we have what many like to call a cookie cutter approach, it doesn't usually work for everyone. There are too many learning styles that have to be addressed by an individual teacher throughout the day, and so we have to be able to give them that autonomy to be able to do what they need, use their professional judgment to make those decisions to help those students move forward. And they may not look like everybody else. It may be something really thinking out of the box, but it helps that child move forward. And we need to be able to get to the point that we can allow that to happen.
All right, I want to talk about poverty. 2 years ago, the district moved to providing free breakfast and lunch for every student in the district because 89% already qualified for at least reduced price, if not free, meals. It was easier administratively and I think more cost effective to simply provide that to every student. If 89% approximately of the student population of Dallas is lower income, and there is a great deal of research that says lots of measurements of academic success can be directly correlated to family wealth. What do we do about that? If the district can't, you know, provide jobs to moms and dads and stability at home, what else can we do that maybe doesn't look like teaching in a classroom and yet does have a measurable effect on students' ability to concentrate and be present and really maximize their own abilities within the classroom?
I think one of the things that we need to really look at is the idea of community schools. With the community schools, we have the opportunity to have what we call wraparound services that works with not only the students, but it works with the whole family. The individuals that need help with learning how to fill out a resume, learning how to fill out an application, maybe their emotional needs within the family unit, that outside services, well coordinated within the schools, can reach out and help them to get to a better place. So when you have these outside services, and we have some at individual campuses, but they're not well coordinated to where it is beneficial not only to the school, to the student, but to the whole family. And then it actually starts to reach out into the community. And you see those positive things happen up and come around through the whole community.
Yeah, Dallas Independent School District can't do it on our own. We need partners with the city, with the county, nonprofits, churches. The poverty issue when kids walk into school is a huge factor, and it can't be ignored. We expect our parents to help with homework, to read to the kids on the weekends. That's very challenging when they may come from a single parent home or both parents are working two jobs, or they're homeless. There are so many economic factors that affect a kid during the day, and we can't do it on our own. We need help.
We also need city leaders and county leaders to recognize that the poverty is growing in an exponential sense in our city, and that Dallas ISD has a role to play in addressing that. But we have to work together as well to try to make that happen. I was very pleased to see the mayor last year, Mayor Mike Rawlings, launch the Mayor's Poverty Task Force, led by Larry James and Regina Montoya. They did a phenomenal job. And guess what they found to be one of the leading indicators and one of the solutions? Early childhood education. And if we can get to our kids earlier, there's a correlation there that says they are less likely to be in poverty once they reach a particular age. So early childhood, I think, is another approach, and we need to have our city leaders working in conjunction with the ISD to move our system forward and to promote early childhood education as well.
Are these litmus test issues, do you want to ensure that the next person hired as superintendent has this at the top of his or her list?
Yes.
All right. Well,
simply put, yes. Yeah. We need somebody who is who's going to be in the community, bringing people together for the benefit of our kids.
One of the things that you'll see Eric, myself, and the rest of the board do in the next couple of weeks is bring to the table our governing philosophy and our mission and our vision. And we will have these conversations. We will talk about early childhood. We will talk about community schools or schools of choice. And that is going to be a big indicator as to what we're going to be looking for that next superintendent. So tune in.
I think it's also important that we have the city leaders there, but I don't think they need to overshadow the educational expertise that is within our schools. And they need to be a part of the conversation, but in my opinion, they don't need to be leading the conversation. They need to be aware and be supportive, but they need to let the educational leaders that are in our district do the actual education piece and the educational part and be supportive of that, but not to take the lead in that.
In preparing for this interview, one of the articles I read was from The Atlantic in 2011, and it looked at the success of schools in Finland. And, of course, Finland's a very different country. But what they said was that the focus in Finland was never on excellence. People didn't say, we want the most excellent schools. They said, we want our schools to provide equal opportunities for every student, which in some ways, to our American way of thinking, sounds like settling for less than the best. And yet, their students are performing vastly better, including students that are being raised in economically challenged circumstances.
And one of the other things they found in that study, and something that's been written about quite a bit since, is how much they respect their teachers. How much teachers get paid, what the profession means to people in Finland. So when you're graduating from the top universities in Finland, people want you to be a teacher and you want to be a teacher. And so in Dallas ISD, I think there are a lot of different things that we can learn from both that study and from studying other European countries. How do we put the focus back on what is really going to make the most difference for our kids? And that's a high-quality educator in every single classroom and making sure that those educators have a support system and that we pay them the way that they should be paid. That's why our TEI system, there's a lot of kinks in the system that I know we need to work out, but I'm a champion for it because I really believe at the core component of it, it wants to respect our educators, support our educators, and pay them what we know that they're worth, all the while making sure that we have top educators in every single one of our classrooms.
I've been really interested in interviews that I've done with teachers. And, of course, no teacher is going to say, I'm making far too much money and I deserve a pay cut. And understandably so. They're not making a lot of money and they work very, very hard. But I've been struck. I would have expected the first complaint to be about income. And certainly people have concerns about this. But teachers do, Rena, talk about needing to feel supported, needing resources within the classroom. Can you talk about some of the things that maybe don't hit the bottom line really hard that would allow teachers to feel like they are more empowered to get their jobs done and be more satisfied at work?
I think one of the biggest things is that teachers are not allowed the time that they need during the workday to be able to have that good planning, that good cooperation as teams inside the campuses, to be able to plan together to support the whole child. And I'll tell you, most teachers would follow a very supportive and encouraging principal or campus leader just about anywhere before they'll talk about their pay. Pay is absolutely important. And in under the TEI, I have to push back a little bit. There's no recognition for advanced degrees, for bettering yourself and learning to be able to help. And there's also no no advantage for your years of service. We know that just about any profession, the longer you do it, normally the better you get. And there are things in place if you are struggling with the supportive administration at the campus level and at the district level. You provide those opportunities for them to grow. If that doesn't help, then there are ways to help them see maybe this is not for you. But I think teachers, if they had adequate supplies, if they had up-to-date, even enough textbooks and current textbooks, if they had time to plan correctly, if they didn't have the pressures of feeling like they had to look over their shoulder all the time because somebody's out to, quote, get them. And that is not on every campus. We have some phenomenal leaders that are leading our campuses where they are just doing wonderful. And we have to be able to grow those. We have support staff, teacher assistants that have been in our district for years. They substitute in our classes. We need to help them grow into getting their certification to take over those classrooms. Many of them live in the district. They live in those neighborhoods. Grow them to be in our schools to help our kids. But with adequate supplies, adequate time to plan and implement and do minimal on the meetings and the extracurricular things that they're having to do in addition to focusing on the student, I think would be a lot further.
Eric, I know that you want to jump in here. We're going to take a quick break, and then I'm going to give you all the time that you'd like to respond and talk about this a little bit. My guests this hour, talking about DISD's search for a new superintendent, are Rena Honey, who is president of Alliance AFT, Miguel Solis, first vice president of the board of DISD, and Eric Cowan, president of the board of the Dallas Independent School District. We will take some calls as well after the break. The number is 1-800-933-5372, or you can email think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Master of Liberal Studies program. You can apply now for fall and design your own master's degree at SMU, a customizable evening master's degree for working professionals. More at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd, speaking this hour with the president of Alliance AFT, Rena Honey, the president of the board of DISD, Eric Cowan, and first vice president, Miguel Solis. We're talking about DISD's search for a new superintendent. Eric Cowan, is there anything you would add to what teachers might want to feel fully supported other than a higher paycheck, addition to a higher paycheck?
I think we have to respect and listen to our veteran teachers. They've been in the classroom the longest. They know what works, what's been tried before, what doesn't work. We shouldn't be so quick to discount their opinions. That said, we've got a lot of young teachers in our district. And if you look at really the millennials, some Gen X teachers, it's not always about the paycheck. They want to be challenged personally, professionally. They want to make a difference. They want to do community service, which they view as education, not only as community service, but a profession. And we need to really figure out how to keep those teachers in our system so they turn into the veteran teachers.
How important is it that we have a superintendent who is bilingual in a district with 70% Latino population, including a significant number of whom are English language learners?
Well, I would say as a trustee who is in a district that is predominantly Hispanic, I don't speak Spanish, it has been challenging. So if we want a superintendent who's going to be able to go out into the community to meet with parents, to go to PTA meetings, it's important. It's not critical to the superintendent position, but if you want to really connect with those parents and grandparents who aren't comfortable speaking the English language, it's important.
I agree wholeheartedly with Eric. It's also interesting to note that in Dallas ISD, we have all sorts of different languages that are spoken. At Conrad High School, I believe there are 35 different languages spoken. So I'm not sure if there are any
polyglots.
Polyglots out there. So, but I'd also say this, to get back to the Spanish component and particularly the ELL component. There's something I've been talking about that doesn't get much play right now, but I believe in the next few years, if we don't do something about it, we're all going to be talking about it, and that is the exponential growth of the ELL population in Dallas ISD and our inability right now to be able to recruit effectively and retain ESL teachers. Right now, I think we're at like 30-some-odd vacancies to start the school year for bilingual teachers. But every year, we have a hard time keeping them. We're going to Spain. We're going to Puerto Rico. We're going to Mexico to try to find them. I believe we should look at our ELL population as an asset, as the answer to our question, why don't we grow our own children to be our ESL teachers of the future? And those are the types of things that I'm going to be looking at for our next superintendent to consider. Because if we don't figure it out, it doesn't bode well for the future of our school system and our city in general.
All right, let's jump on the phones here. 800-933-5372 is our number. Brett is on the line in Louisville. Hi, Brett.
Hey, Chris. My question is about lobbying. And I know AFT does a great job of lobbying and legislative updates. But I'm wondering if the school districts have kind of bound together and started trying to lobby the legislature in Austin, because a lot of the issues are coming out of the legislators in Austin. I always say that, the folks in Austin earn their conservative stripes on the backs of school children and teachers. I would like to make one other point. I heard people talking about, pay. My wife is actually an educator, and we are on her insurance. And, when you talk about retention, our insurance bill with health, medical, and life is $1,800 a month, and it's horrible insurance. Mm-hmm. And that has just been going up and up every year. So that's a house payment for most people. So it does matter how you pay them and the benefits they receive. So that's my question. I'd be curious about your answers.
Thanks for your call.
Well, the DISD does have a team of lobbyists that work with our legislators down in Austin. What I think we can do a better job of is working together with the other big districts like Houston, Austin, El Paso, and really unifying our voice on what we need for our kids. It's not a red issue. It's not a blue issue. It's an education issue, and it affects all of us. We're in a red state. We all know this. But we need our guys down in Austin and gals to understand the decisions they make are going to impact the future of our state long before we're all gone.
And I can tell you this right now that one of my priorities, and I'm pretty sure Eric feels the same way, we have got to figure out this school finance system in Texas. The legislators have kicked the can down the road for too long. We are not getting equitable funding, and we in Dallas ISD are suffering because of that. We've had to cut places. We've had to, back in 2011, there were schools that were closed. And for whatever reason, legislators don't want to seriously consider this as an entire body. Jimmy Don Acock did a great job trying to have a conversation, but the conversation was just a conversation. And I think on our end, we're tired of the talking, and we will be even more forceful, I think, next year when the next session comes back on that issue.
I think it's important to know this is, I believe, the fifth court case on education funding in Texas over the last years. And so it has not been equitable for a long time. We are expected as a public school district to educate our children, give them the very best, because they're going to be taking care of us at some point. We want their very best. But I think it's also important that we encourage every registered voter to take an interest in this. Know who you're voting for and go vote, because that's how we're going to get people in office that will listen, that will pay attention and say, this is really important and this needs to be at the forefront rather than what gets at the very end.
Back to the phones now. This time we'll speak with Tony in DeSoto. Hi, Tony.
Hello, how you doing?
Very well, thanks.
Well, I'm listening to the conversation. I've noticed that there's two white and one Hispanic. There's no black representation in this conversation. And it's not like a kumbaya conversation, like, you know, everything is just all dandy and centralized and everything else. So my thing is, I would figure that the panel should have diverse voices, because at least just talk about the Hispanic position. There's no one talking about the black poverty and black issues on this panel. And I don't think anyone on this panel has expertise in that unless you tell me you mix black or you from my community. So I want to prepare a panel position on that. I'll stop here.
Well, I appreciate your call. We don't have any African-Americans on the panel today. Certainly, we have had people who are African-American on the show before talking about education. But I wonder how different the issues are with regard to if you're talking about students who are black or Latino or white or Native American or Asian or whatever. How important it is that they be looked at as separate entities and or that they be looked at sort of in this with the same lens?
Yeah, so a couple of things. First, on the kumbaya statement, I know Eric and I and Rena and I have disagreed on all sorts of things in the past, I think. But in many ways, we're trying to find every opportunity to try to work together to move our school system forward, which brings me to my second point. Dallas ISD is not facing an African-American issue or a Hispanic issue or an Anglo issue. It is facing an issue for Dallas ISD at large. And every decision that we make is going to impact all children. But I would also say that this board in particular, as it relates to the success of our African-American students, we have a lot of work to do. Last year as the president, I launched a review of the 10 years that we've had the African-American Success Initiative. And if you look at our history in Dallas ISD, we've thrown a lot of money at trying to decrease the achievement gap between African-American students and all other students. And that money, for whatever reason, has not made the difference that we needed to see. So we called a review to say, what are we doing effectively with the money that we're spending for African-American students? What are we not doing effectively? And how can we provide even more support to try to bring our African-American students up? Because we in Dallas ISD don't want to see any student left behind, and we're going to make sure that that's not the case.
Who do you talk to when you want answers to those questions?
Yeah, so in this instance, I think we had a panel of about 30 community leaders from all walks of life, from all different ages. I think our youngest that we had was a 22-year-old teacher that was in Dallas ISD. And I think the oldest that we had was probably a 70-year-old community leader who has seen all sorts of different issues in her time. And they provided such a unique insight into what we're trying to do. And I think we have to continue to ask those questions. We have to continue to go down and have conversations with people from the southern sector, people from South Dallas, people from southern Dallas, because ultimately the community are the ones that really have the answers to DISD being successful. And so we're going to continue to do that as a board.
If I were trying to get the job of Dallas Independent School District Superintendent, I think in my interview I would prepare a lot of great big ideas, a lot of really new things that I wanted to try. How much of succeeding is simply a matter of fully following through on anybody's vision of improvement and you know, longer than the 3-year tenures that we've seen in recent years? Do we need maybe the next person to say, okay, I'm going to take these good ideas that happened during the Mike Miles administration and carry them through, or I'm going to start something brand new, but I'm going to expect, you know, really to stick with this for a decade or more?
Yeah, Mike Miles launched a lot of big initiatives: early childhood education, school choice, the teacher and principal evaluation system.
Launched but didn't finish.
Right. It may, I don't want to say never be finished, but it may take 10 to 15 years to see the fruits of those ideas. As we move forward with the new superintendent, and Miguel touched on this briefly, last time we launched a search, we had community meetings, we took our time, we developed a candidate profile. I would bet now that that profile that the Dallas community wants in a superintendent has not changed. So what we would like to get to as a board is talk about our vision and our mission, talk about our beliefs and these initiatives that we've started, and really set a strategic culture here in Dallas ISD where the superintendent, quote unquote, doesn't matter. It's Dallas's plan. It's DISD's system. It's our culture. These are what we believe in. These are what we want to do. If they don't work, tweak them along the way or get rid of them. But really, early childhood education, effective teachers in every classroom, those are things that aren't going to change or should not change in the next superintendent.
And I think we're also focused on two words, stability and consistency. Rena can probably share with you, you know, how the story she gets from teachers when it comes to a new superintendent coming in. I mean, one of the first things I'm sure they
say
is, here we go again. Yeah. When I was a teacher in DISD, Michael Hinojosa was my superintendent. The next year, Alan King was my superintendent. I went off for a year, came back, and Mike Miles was the superintendent. So we need to make sure that we're providing our teachers, our community, but most importantly, our students with stability and consistency.
I think also it's important, big ideas are good to some degree, but I think for Dallas, especially in the place that we're in right now, we've got to get back to the basics of education, true education, experiments, big ideas, whatever you want to call them, when they've not been replicated for a long period of time and proven to be successful. Many people see that as just experiments. We need to get back to good, strong, basic educational ethics and teaching to help our kids be good thinkers, to be problem solvers, to work collaboratively, but be able to take initiative on their own as well. We've got to look at the total child. Every child needs art, music, PE, time to socialize. Every child needs that, and there are ways to incorporate that into the educational day to where the teachers can do what they need to do to work with them, and we've got to get back to doing that. Having a teacher come in at 6:30, 7 o'clock in the morning and be there till 7 or 8 o'clock at night just because of the planning, the meetings, the preparedness for the next day. They have lives and they have families as well. And if you give them the time to adequately do those things, we can get back to that good basic education. And all of the newer teachers that are coming in, hopefully we can draw some of the veterans back and help them understand that we all grow this in a way that we can get back to good, strong, solid educational practices for our students.
Rena Honey is president of Alliance AFT, the local affiliate of the American Federation of Teachers. Miguel Solis is first vice president of the DISD board. Eric Cowan is president of the board of the Dallas Independent School District. It's been great to have you all here. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker and engineered by Shelley Canavy. Our associate producer is Lindsay Connect. Jeff Whittington is executive producer. I'm on Twitter at Chris Boyd Think. You can contact the show via email at think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.